Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir. I'm a licensed clinical social worker practicing as an intuitive psychotherapist. You can find me online through my website, which is nolatherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy. And from my website, you're able to schedule sessions to meet with me in person or via phone, Skype, or FaceTime. You're able to listen to archived episodes of the show. You're able to subscribe to this show through the links to iTunes and Google Play. And please support me to keep doing this show. I have a link to Patreon, and my crowdfunding campaign is found through patreon.com/LisaTahir. And I really appreciate that in advance. Today, this show is brought to you by Audible. They have over 180,000 titles available, and they offer you as a listener a free month and a free audiobook download of your choice. And you go to audibletrial.com/allthingstherapy. So my guest today is someone special to me. I'm taking this month to feature glass artists. Many of you know that I am a professional glass artist in addition to being a therapist, and glass is a true passion. It's my therapy. It's how I'm able to process emotion and just really put myself and everything into kind of form and shape. So one of my mentors and people that I have looked up to and had the pleasure of assisting is my guest today. And in moments, we will be with Karen Willenbrink Johnson. She's an internationally renowned glass sculptor. She and her husband, Jason Johnson, co-teach around the world year-round. And her work is inspired by her love of nature and bird watching in particular, where Karen has talked about bird watching since being an infant. Her lifelike glass birds, rocks, and flowers are just exquisite. I posted some pictures to Twitter and LinkedIn and my Facebook. You can find her work at Willenbrink Johnson, johnsen.com, if you want to pull it up while you're listening to look at some of her and her husband's pieces that they've created. She has worked with blown glass as a sculptural material for over 30 years, and it's her passion. And today we're going to talk about that. She really believes in living from doing what you love, and that being a form of spirituality and is what helps her create these beautiful one-of-a-kind pieces. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how are you? You're welcome.
I'm good. I'm happy.
So where do you want to start today as far as educating listeners about your work and just talking about your passion for glass and making?
I'm going to just start with a little bit of background of who I am and how I found glass.
Great.
I was raised in the cornfield east of Cincinnati. And I think that, you know, people 30 years ago or in the late 70s, especially in Ohio, was a lot about labor and stuff and very little bit of that art could be important or that you could actually have a career in it. So I didn't give it a lot of thought about ever becoming an artist. I went to Ohio University finally in college, and I took an elective. I took glass blowing, and I thought it was lamp working. I thought people made little beads. And when I walked in, the woman was blowing glass. And immediately seeing that vision, intuitively, I knew that is how I was going to spend the rest of my life, that glass was going to be my venue.
Yeah.
And it just woke up my whole life. I I managed to get out of Ohio and move to upstate New York and lived in a barn to do glass, just apprenticing. And it was rather crude, but I believe in those times when I lived in Catskills, I had tons of time to birdwatch and observe animals. So I hold that time very precious because I didn't have a lot of people around me. It was in my young 20s. So it gave me time to center up and really see what I wanted to do. And I know of anything, I didn't have any answers, but I knew that I was going. I knew that I was going to spend my life in glass and knew I was going to touch a lot of lives in glass. And out of the blue, I got a job in the hot shop at Pilchuck Glass School, which, as you know, it's an internationally famous school that runs in the summer for glass, and I got a job in the hot shop.
So that's how you went from New York in the barn to be, because I know you've spent over 70 sessions at Pilchuck Glass School in 24 winters.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. You got a job at Pilchuck.
I did, sight unseen. So I still hold that as one of my great good lucks in my life.
Yeah.
I think it's just important, you know, I try to tell the younger kids, you know, when they say, gosh, how am I going to get there? And, you know, there's not answers when, you know, you're standing in front of your future, but it's important to know that you're going to get there, because if you, in your heart, you know, you're going to get there, you're going to find a way. And I mean, in anybody's passion, you know, if you want to live a life of music, well, live that life of music and things will open up for you, but it definitely takes believing in yourself. And I think your whole life, people are going to doubt you.
Yeah.
So, it's so important to hold on to your belief above anybody else's opinion.
Karen, what would you say to the listener that might be struggling a bit by what their passion is? Did that ever happen for you? And how might somebody work through defining that?
Gosh, what is your passion? What fuels you? What gives you energy? What gives you happiness? I never had a problem with knowing my passions, because I love being happy. And I mean being happy not as in I don't see what's going on in the real world and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's seeing all that and still finding contentment with yourself and with life. So you almost need things that make you fuel your fire.
So you don't get jaded.
You can't get jaded. No.
Right.
You know, everything in life that is beautiful and stuff, everything has a price. So, you know, it's worth that price. We don't make lots of money. I don't need lots of money. I live my wealth, you know, and I think that that's so important to let your life be your wealth, because when you die, it's the only thing going with you. So many people worry about security and material wealth when God, live for yourself, and then your brain's always, you know, you're always centered up on what you love, and it's easy to have a spring to your step because you're living truth, you're living your truth. So
how did you find that nature and making birds in particular and rocks and these beautiful creations? How were you drawn to sculpt those out of glass?
That was so natural. If I'm making flowers or birds or working on mammals, it's just another way of learning about what I make. You know, it makes you think about their lives
kind of bringing them back to life in a way, you know, like
it is, it's living through them. When I make, just say a dog, I think about what kind of breed that dog is, what it was meant for, what it looks like, what color the eyes are, what the skeleton would look like, why the skeleton's built that way. So I answer so many questions about the animals or the birds that I'm making, why I'm making them. It's just all part of the adventure.
Yeah. And I know when I've assisted you, you have bird watching books with the anatomy, because your work is so real life. I mistakenly posted your pet parrot thinking it's one of your glass creations.
That was fun.
Yeah. Until people commented, because your work is so real. Just anyone listening, you need to pull up Karen Willenbring Johnson's work on Google, because it's so real life and you were meticulous in working with you and assisting on making every petal of the flower, every feather of the bird through color application and layering. And how did you discover how to make these pieces?
Well, the work, I'm obsessed and always have been pretty obsessive about working. In my 20s or 30s, I would work maybe 30 days off, on, take a day off, 30 days on, take a day off, just because I needed to. It was so important for me to be able to make things that my imagination wanted to make. Mm-hmm. So I know it took a lot of hands-on just to be able to get through the learning stage good, well enough to create your ideas with clarity.
Yes. So in teaching, how did you go from working at Pilchuck to teaching and teaching around the world?
Okay. When it comes to teaching, I believe that I'm a natural. It comes to me so easy. And for me, it's really important. It's one of my greatest passions besides glass, is sharing all that I've learned. And when Jason and I teach, we put in 150%. When the students work, we're there with them. We try to make sure that all our demonstrations are, not about what we really want to make, but what is information that people could soak up, absorb, and bring into their own work. It's really important for me to touch the youth, especially, and I should even say just the youth. People take my classes that are, in their 40s and 50s too. But, I help remind people to love what they do or why they're doing it. Live that passion, believe in yourself, live full, live with energy, live with excitement, because as being an artist, that's what it's about.
Right. Right. So I know I'm referencing Jason. You're referencing Jason. If we can let our listeners know about your husband and co-creator, Jason Johnson. Yes. How did you all meet? How did you start making work together and teaching around the world?
Well, let's see. It was a cold winter and he got a job. I'm just kidding. I met Jason and he was really very quiet. He hardly said, he came to Pilchuck and he was so quiet. It just endeared me to him because I'm so loud and busy. We work together. We complement each other.
You do.
I chat a lot. I have a micromanaging issue and he's just so laid back and he's just willing to do what needs to be done. And he's the kindest human I ever met. So every day I feel pretty blessed to have him. We've been together 20 years now, 16 we've been married.
That's beautiful.
But he's a beautiful human.
He is. And okay, his work. Go on.
Okay. And I'll just say, and about the teaching, as we travel, and the teaching's been huge for us, because what I love is that the more you travel, the more open your mind becomes, and for me that's really important. And the same with Jason, that I myself love that I'm from the cornfields of Ohio and there's so much narrow-minded thought And even as a kid, I couldn't wait to leave and live where people respect everybody else more. And I don't mean my family, because my family's always been open and loving. But I just kind of think, you know, the mentality of some places that have a lot to be desired.
Right.
You know, when it comes to being open about other people.
And you're so open, and I'm thinking you bring that energy to the region where you're from. Do you go home often? Do you have any family still in that region of Ohio?
Oh, I sure do. I mean, my twin sister's there who, you know, we've been as tight as two people can be our whole lives. And she's always, I know. And we're quite different. She's a kindergarten teacher and I'm the artist and stuff. We're different in a lot of ways, but we all live with passion. You know, my brothers too. My mom passed away, but my dad's 89 years old. And he's the one that taught all of his kids to maybe love life, learn to see, live your passion. He's a good day expert. He still is at 89 and a half years old. He's a beautiful human.
And your dad's a naturalist, as are you.
Yeah. Yes.
And taught you all about fossils and animals and trees and the power of nature. Is that accurate?
He really did. He really did. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was a strong value in your family.
Oh, it is. I mean, I still get nervous being inside buildings. I'm way happier outside. Outside in nature is always my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about how you translate that into your work, you work with the blown glass bubble, yet you work with it as a sculptural material. And Jason, your husband, makes specific tools for you to be able to sculpt the bubble from the inside, correct?
It is correct. When I first met Jason, he was not a tool maker or equipment maker, but I'm a person that I work with a lot of different tools that maybe have never been made before, because you need certain effects. So, you know, Jason started making them for me, and they were so beautiful that he actually has a wonderful line of glass blowing tools that are really popular among glass blowers.
Yes. And those are available through your website, willembrinkjohnson.com.
Yeah, Jason. Yes.
Is there another spot also?
Hot Glass Color Supply in Seattle. It's all his tools.
So when you teach and when you demonstrate.
They're always in demand.
Yeah, because they're so unique and are not mass produced.
Well made. They're not pressed or. They're just all handmade well.
Yes. So in thinking about Karen, when I've watched you demo work and assisted you, that you bring this vision, like we're going to make, say, I saw a demo at Corning where you did this gorgeous peacock. And I'm just like, OMG, it's so beautiful. Do you and Jason kind of work out the details in advance, or do you sometimes just make something you've never made? How do you approach when you sit at the bench?
Okay. The only other time that was the second attempt at a peacock. The first one was at the glass conference demo in Norfolk. I just love adventure. I love working with teams. So, you know, after I make something a few times, I've had enough of it. If it's, you know, unless it really still pushes. When I still feel like I'm pushing boundaries, I love continuing to make an idea, but once something's made and made well, I kind of lose interest in it because I'm no longer asking questions about it. The peacock is a fun, you know, kind of new adventure, and it does take a lot of effort. The one you saw at Corning took 7 days of parts just before to put it together. And then, of course, that particular piece cracked. So you have to have a sense of humor to say that, you know, 8 days worth of true labor, you know, and that just goes up in smoke. And you think, wow, ouch, that hurts. But I'm used to it. I mean, maybe in your 20s and stuff, the first time you start losing major pieces, you know, you have a good cry and stuff.
Right.
Now I have some good cuss. You know, you have a good few good cuss words and you move on because shit happens. And you got to get used to that. That's life. That's not God punishing you or, you know, all the things people want to, you know, feel sorry for themselves and you can't. Because you got to get back up and move on like it didn't happen. It's just, that's how life is. You know, just life happens. You get over it and you move on. If you, you know, I think if you feel sorry for yourself too much, you, if you let the self-doubt overpower your need to move on, then that's not a good thing. Self-doubt is just all part about being an artist. You know, you just take that and you throw it away and you move on.
Yeah. I think that's an important piece, Karen, the self-doubt and how to work with it. And knowing that artists, even as prolific as you are, still struggle, still have those thoughts, and you push on. I think that's helpful for listeners to know.
It is. But it's the only,
That you just keep going.
That's why you'll never reach utopia. Or, you know, I guess I was naive first going out in the glass, and, you know, my only thought was, wow, I'm going to work so hard and I'm going to be so, just never quit work and I'm going to get so good. I'm going to be a somebody. And then you realize, wow, okay, 30 years, you know, and doing it, you're never going to reach that perfect utopia. You're never going to be that somebody that, you know, but it always gives you something to work toward. You know, I mean, to this day, I can't wait till I can get good or great. You know,
wow.
But that's all part of life. You know, dues are never paid.
That surprises me hearing you say that with the level of excellence that you've developed in your work, that even for you, you keep striving for more.
Oh, Lisa, I think of thoughts and I have to, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I think, oh God, here it goes, because all I can do is think about what to make or how, what kind of technique would work to get different effects. So I really am absorbed with glass, with what I love is always a constant. Even when we travel, everything is, wow, look at that former. Oh, look at those colors together. So everything, you know, becomes, all that information becomes education.
Yeah.
You just try to remember to see, to learn to see. And it's easy then to pick up inspiring ideas or colors or forms.
Pieces of information as you move throughout your life and your day. So I know heard you speak and say that at 8 years old, you got a glass splinter in your hand and somehow you knew that glass would be a part of your life forever. Did you know what that meant at the time when you were 8?
No, but it was such a powerful, I mean, to see my hand bleeding and this big shard of glass sticking out of it, and I didn't feel pain or anything, but how huge of a thought could that be that you never forgot that the thought of, wow, glass is going to be a big part of my life. And I didn't really hold on to it as a teenager and stuff. I mean, you kind of remembered that. I'll have this scar forever. But I always remember, wow, that was so weird. And then, you know, the day I walked in and saw the woman blowing glass, and I just was overwhelmed with knowing that that's how I was going to spend the rest of my life, which, again, wasn't a thought. It was a knowing. And, you know, like I said previously, there's other major details about the birth of my niece and the death of my grandmothers and the death of my mom. All I understood was going to happen intuitively. I knew that was happening. But I think also I live close to my soul. I live close to who I am, the belief of who I'm supposed to be. So I don't really get peer pressured from people, but I live, I don't want to say self-absorbed. That sounds so cocky. But I mean, I'm always immersed in what I love. You know,
yeah.
And I think that when you live purely, intuition becomes a lot easier. You know, my whole life, animals have come to me. And, you know, you can say all you want, what a coincidence stuff. But it's so odd how many places in the world I've been that owls show up. And
yeah,
I thoroughly believe that, you know, animals see, animals feel energy. Animals are a lot more aware than we give them credit for. Let's just say
they
that.
They are. And
so, and when things like that happens, it just makes me know that I live the correct path.
So it sounds like they're almost like confirmations when you encounter an animal in nature, that it's like a little reminder, like, hey, yes, you're right on. We got your back. Those little encouragers.
It is, but it's like, you know, many times owls have showed up and they're 2,000 miles off course and
wow.
You know, on a post 5 feet in front of me. And you think, wow, another one of those weird coincidences. So and not to go woohoo too far off.
It's okay.
It happens in meditation too. You know, so how do you talk about energies and stuff? You know, but my dreams and meditation are all beautiful, and what animals tell me in meditation is priceless. Things that I'll learn the rest of my life.
That's beautiful and powerful. I have similar experiences.
Very, very powerful.
Yeah, in meditation
very
with
powerful.
Animals. I had an encounter with a shark, with the largest bull shark in Pensacola Beach in years, a couple of years ago, where it showed up right at the nose of my surfboard. And about 20 guys were screaming, paddling out the water for their lives. And I just sat there frozen, like staring at it. And it was like this moment. And then he or she just turned and swam along the Gulf Coast. But it was like a, I don't know, this moment where it's me and this huge shark just staring at each other. And it was
wow.
like, oh my God.
Wow.
Like I felt wow. powerful and powerless. My thought was like, I'm on your turf. Like, it's up to you what to do. And I feel like the animal just kind of, you know, acknowledged me and just kept going on.
Wow. See, that's, yes. That's beautiful, and, Lisa.
Thank you. And for you, owls are an important inspiration imagery in your work. Can you talk to us about owls
yeah.
and their importance?
Gosh. I don't know what caused me to make my first owl, but I realized the importance of it. But, you know, I was at Pilchuck, and then you talk about what you create or all the energy. Okay, I will share, like, stories like this. My very last week of working at Pilchuck in the winter, after renting it for 24 years, my very last week, I said, I'm going to make pygmy owls. And pygmy owls are rare up here, but a pygmy owl showed up every day for the last 5 days that I worked and
wow.
was not there the day after when I wasn't there, you know, and they're not common, much less stay at the same tree right by the hot shop for 5 days.
Oh my gosh.
So,
you're
you know,
in tune.
Isn't that beautiful? But I'm very in tune, but you know, and also I don't even know where to begin because I have a lot of stories like that with animals, you know, showing up and stuff or whatever, but everybody can read about it. But it was always very beautiful for me.
It sounds beautiful.
And then another, this is an animal, but I had a chance. I had a residency in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I'm thinking, wow, Tulsa, Oklahoma, there's not going to be a lot to do. But here, a woman was a docent at the zoo, and she said, Karen, I'd like to bring you to the zoo. And the moral of the story, or the basis of the story, is I got to spend over an hour with the two zookeepers, and there are two elephants. And the two elephants didn't stop touching me the whole time.
Really?
And the elephant keepers were laughing. They're like, oh, they love you. I'm like, this is the greatest hour of my life.
That's awesome.
So great. Oh, Lisa, it was so beautiful. They kept eye contact with me the whole time. but their trunks playing with me, or, you know, circling my neck and hugging me was way too, it was just very empowering, very empowering.
It sounds humorous too, like y'all were playing and having fun.
Oh, they were having great fun. And it's at one of the zoos that people can't get close to them. You know, they have quite a big, you know, area that only the viewers get to take a train ride around them. So very few people are allowed even up near them, or that they ever get close to anybody. So I felt very, very proud. Oh, it was great.
That you had that opportunity.
I love any animal. It was really beautiful. I mean, you really felt their intelligence and their power and their playfulness. And I really felt that I had, you know, it was like spending time with new friends.
Yeah.
I'm as content with any animal as I am with humans.
Totally. So, Karen, I'm going to do a quick commercial for 30 seconds. So just hang tight and then we'll continue.
Okay.
Good for you. Awesome. For you, the listeners of All Things Therapy, Audible.com is bringing you a free trial to be able to check them out for 30 days, along with a free audiobook download. They have, like I said earlier, over 180,000 titles to choose from, like Girl on a Train, and take advantage of their offer by going to audibletrial.com/allthingstherapy. So, Karen, I know that at some point during your career, you spent 20 years making objects with the artist, the glass artist, William Morris, known as Billy Morris.
Yes.
Can you talk to us some about how that time, what that was like, and how it influenced or affected your career, your life?
My first summer working at Pilchuck, I met Bill, and he asked me for a job, and I worked with him for 20 years till his retirement. But 16 of those years, I had my own bench, and I made some of the smaller elements for his larger work. It was priceless. The education I got from that was priceless. And I mean being able to sit and experiment making stuff for 20 years.
That's amazing.
Bill gave me a lot of freedom of what I wanted to make and about color and stuff. So I know I lasted too long with him because I'm a good thinker of how to work out ideas in glass.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of my stronger points. I don't always have the patience for detail. Isn't that funny? I don't have patience that I wish I had, you know, when it comes down to it with the final details, but I'm good at figuring out ideas and that kind of stuff. So Bill was just a great education. And I remember the one time, you know, he taught me a couple things that was really important. I remember when I was, you know, working for him after a couple years, he asked me to bring a difficult bit. And I said, Bill, I can't make that bit. Or I can't do that. And he's like, never say I can't. And I mean, he said it so loud, it scared the living crap out of me. and he just say, don't ever say I can't, say I'm trying. And really, Lisa, that was one of those things in life that really changed the outcome of how you think.
Yeah.
Because I never thought any more I can't. I thought, well, I'm going to try and see where I can go. So that was one really beautiful thing that I learned from Bill. And another one was, I remember, you know, making something out. And Bill turned, you know, from his bench to me and he said, Karen, we are so blessed. I don't know if he used the word blessed, but it means the same thing. That we get to come in here and every day we get to evolve. We get it, you know, every day you experiment with what you love, you're evolving. And I like to think that I still evolve. It's still important for me to evolve in glass. You know, you make something, people want to buy it. You know, I probably would have plenty of money if I just wanted to stop and make owls, but I have moved on from that because my spirit would have been dead if I stuck to it, you know, longer than you should, you know. Always live with curiosity.
what you're talking about are such important themes that apply to all of us. I mean, I'm relating too. I've been a therapist for over 20 years. And while I love doing therapy and helping people in that one-on-one encounter, I also feel drawn to work on a book and to have started the show almost 2 years ago to reach people, to use my voice in a different way. And it's been scary because I'm like, where's the money going to come from? But I'm trying to follow my heart and my passion and just to trust that if I do what I really feel called and like alive to do, and even making art, you know, my mentor, Gene Koss, I've been with him 21 years and just working with him around the world. He's taught me so much to like never stop trying and don't say you can't, just like you said, like to just keep pushing yourself, stay in the studio, be committed to your vision. And so I'm hearing you echo some of the same sentiments that I think are just really important for us to remember.
Oh, it's the first thing you should, after you say your thank yous, it's the first thing you should remember every day you wake up.
Yes.
How can I improve my thought? I love education. I mean, especially in GLASS, but I love reading. The more I know, the happier I am. Well, the more I know I don't know.
Same here.
It's really important. I tell that to the young kids. You know, they're like, oh, I know how to make that. And I go, okay, that's good. But just remember, the more you know, you don't know. Nut.
So when you talk about evolving and how that's important to you, how does teaching inform your evolution and vice versa?
Wow. Okay. For me, it's the experiences around the teaching. It's learning about different areas I'm at. But in actual teaching, I like seeing how other people think. When I teach, I don't think, wow, I'm teaching. I am a see it as a round table, even though I have the biggest space, you know, showing the demos and stuff. But I learn a lot just from feedback from others. I definitely think, you know, teaching, I don't know, because it all, when I teach, I always come back inspired, re-inspired. Mm. And maybe it's just the sharing, the meeting of the mind, to remember that everybody else is in the same boat, you know, and I feel good when I get to share my wisdom with the youth or say different ways of getting ahead or to remember to believe in yourself. You know, to remember to find ways to find passion, keep your brain curious. All that is priceless. Is if you live in a creative state, you know, you need to be curious. You need to always be feeding yourself information. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to grow.
Yes.
But I have an important show, I think, in December. In Habitat Gallery in West Palm Beach with Jay Scott. I'm, for the first time, I mean, usually we teach like 8 to 10 workshops a year, but I tried to limit it to just a couple this year so that I can really focus on this one-man show that I'm going to have, you know, have at Jay Scott, at Habitat, I mean. So for me, it's a little scary because I have to remember to feel encouraged without being able to go to a class and people go, do it. You know what I mean? Without that.
Yeah.
It's different when you're always, you know, hidden out in your studio. You feel like you're the only human in the world.
Right.
So it's always hard to remember to stay focused and believing in yourself. For me, you know, that's. But that's my goal for this year, is to really center up for this show in December.
So I was going to ask you.
I'm excited. It's next. Very exciting.
So this is December 2018?
Yes, it is.
At Habitat in West Palm Beach, California?
Florida.
Florida,
yeah,
okay.
No, Florida.
I get confused. Yeah. Okay, Habitat. Okay, very exciting. So you're doing less workshops so that you can be prepared for this one-woman show.
A really good show that I can have a really thoughtful show. I had a residency in California in, Pulsar Community Center. I had a 6-week workshop, but it gave me a lot of time to work out ideas. I feel really prepared, you know, because sometimes drawing out ideas is the most difficult. You know, it's harder for me to do something two-dimensional than it is three-dimensional. But once you do it two-dimensionally, you can answer so many questions.
Do you use a sketchbook, Karen, approaching your work and figuring out problem-solving, how to make it?
Constantly. Okay. And I do a sketchbook of ideas, which, just so many sketchbooks around. But also then when I get somewhere and I have my team, I drawings out and I go through from the start of the piece to the end of the piece in pretty much detail. It's all written out so people have no questions what's going next, what color we're going to use. I stay pretty organized that way because once you're on the pipe, all chaos, you know, if you have like 8 people working with you, you got to stay pretty centered on what, you know, when I have help, all my help is really good on centered. It's hard to have. I do not like people that don't like to give 150% or have a great attitude. It just doesn't work with my shop. I don't like negative attitudes at all. It's like, you know, go get a job as an
somewhere else.
Whatever.
Yeah, get out of here.
But you know what? And it's other things that now that I'm talking about, you know, the youth. I also think it's important to remind young kids to learn to love to work because as an artist or musician or actor, any of that creative stuff, it takes effort, it takes time, and it takes commitment.
Yeah.
So I'm always reminding people, you better learn to love to work, kid.
Yes. You know, Karen, you've said a couple of times while we've been talking about you're saying you have a lack of patience. However, I've worked with you, assisting you, and I am not a great glass blower. I'm more of a caster, and you have been so patient when I have brought you bits for flowers and for rocks, and I find you to be very patient, especially when I bring you the wrong thing over and over again. So I think you actually do have a lot of patience in helping those of us that aren't as skilled glass blowers and able to sculpt the bubble to really learn. Like I learned a lot about just these tiny, like little bitty flower petals that I never thought I could be able to you know, bring to you. So I find you to be very patient. So you might want to reconsider
that. Oh, you're great.
Thank you.
I appreciate you saying that. And I love working with people assisting me. And it's easy. I mean, unless you work for me for years, then I lose patience, you know, then I'm going to know.
That's different. Yeah.
But it's easy. But I'm a born teacher. So, and like I said, I love sharing glass. When we're working, I have music. I can't work without music because music is also very important to me. But I like keeping it positive. You know, it's all about teamwork. So it doesn't work if it's not, you know, if it's negative or I just don't care for heckling or any of that kind of crap.
Like a supportive, loving environment.
Yeah, as it should be. All people should be that way.
Yeah.
If I teach and, you know, I start hearing somebody heckle, I put a stop to that quicker than they can see straight. And they're like, I was just kidding, Carol. I go, I don't give a shit what you're doing. There'll be no more of that thing.
Exactly.
You know, people don't need a hard time. You know, people just need encouragement. Just leave it at that. Thank you.
I like that. So where are your two workshops this year, in case people are interested, in 2018?
One's going to be in Istanbul at the Glass Furnace. If I can get there, if I can get a visa. But, you know, I don't want to talk politics stuff, but it makes me sad to go over to Turkey with the United States acting so rough with the rest of the world, you know, just depresses me. So I'm kind of sad. I'm not, of course, I'm not worried about you know, going to Istanbul and stuff. Everybody there is beautiful, and all the Muslims are beautiful people.
Yes.
You know, I more would be embarrassed that I'm American coming from, you know,
coming from this government. Into.
Okay. And then I'm doing, near you guys in LA, I'm doing a demo and a lecture at Cal State Fullerton.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And
awesome.
The first week, I think it's April 9th or 11th.
Okay. That's awesome.
I'm going to spend the whole week there, just maybe going to the botanical gardens and stuff in LA.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But I'm excited to go there. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, Karen.
I was born a ham, so I really have fun in demos.
I know you do. They're great. It's amazing to watch you work.
Other people are nervous, and I'm like, thinking, oh my God, everybody's looking at me. This is too good.
When you have a great team when you work, so you can trust everyone to execute what's being made, so it allows you to kind of have some fun, I think.
Yeah, be a ham. That's exactly how I like to play that game.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Karen, what are some of the things you want to leave with listeners in our kind of conclusion in our last 4 minutes? And what is important for you to leave as a legacy and to be known for?
Wow. There's very few Americans that sculpted glass when I started sculpting glass. And, you know, I've taught over 100 workshops in 16 different countries. So I think that I've spread so much love and sharing. I'm very generous with everything I know about glass. So I think that I've left a legacy of being sharing in glass and giving, you know. I've taught generations of people to sculpt glass. And all I want to know when I die is that I've been loved and stuff. And I think that I've touched a lot of lives in glass.
Yes.
Because I've tried to, you know, I've really cared about people learning. And that's all you can wish for. You know.
And Karen, I know that you've been called by the Italian maestros a female maestro, and what an honor, because you have conducted so many workshops around the world and touched so many people. How does that feel to be recognized in the ways that you have been?
Priceless.
Yeah.
Priceless. I mean, I forget that all the time. And then, you know, at my age, when you have self-doubt, you have things like that to go back on.
Right.
You know, you made it this far, Karen. You can't be all that bad. Or, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound that pathetic, but.
I don't think you do at all.
I'm proud of where I've gotten, because I can honestly say I've never felt that I've sold my soul. I've always sided with the side of art or what is truthful. And not like, okay, yeah, I'll make 15 of those the same shade. You know, I've always tried to only, you know, do good and be happy for other people. So I'm, you know, I work hard on trying to improve the lives of others and stuff. I know that sounds corny, but I'm sure that will be my legacy, is that I've touched a lot of lives in glass.
You've touched mine, and I know tens of thousands of others, because you're so genuine and real, and it comes through.
Oh, thanks. And I have good words of wisdom. I mean, just about living your passion, I think, and living for your spirit and live for the quality of your life.
Yes. And I'm honored to have one of your pieces in my collection, and one of Jason, your husband's beautiful glass guitars. It's two of my favorite pieces.
Oh, that's great.
Love them. Excellent. And I'm so grateful.
I'm happy to hear that, Lisa. That's excellent.
Karen,
you need to come up to my studio and play.
I want to come play. I haven't been to Pilchuck. I spent 8 summers there, and you've been down to New Orleans, I know, on several occasions. So I would love, even when you're at Cal State, I'm going to see if I can make that happen, to be there.
Okay, good, because then we would have a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, I'll let you know. Thank you so much awesome. For being my guest today.
It was my joy. It was my pleasure. Thank you, Lisa.
You are very welcome. I love you very much.
Okay. I love you too.
Okay.
Bye. Now.
That concludes our show for today. Thank you for listening. I hope everyone is having a great holiday season, and listen in next week at the same time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir.